Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Listen to me now, very important. A multi award-winning TV show begins a new series on telly tonight. It's a totally fab show that showcases and celebrates the science behind our modern lives. Now, each episode explores one particular topic and we get to meet Irish researchers working here and abroad on really important projects that affect us all. It is called 10 Things to Know About and I'm pleased to be joined by one of the stars of the show, Dr. Fergus McAuliffe. How are you, Fergus? How's it going?
It is going really well, thank you.
Just really quickly, in Jen's Newsy Bits, it's an item we do at the top of the show. We were talking about the concept of time and how we visualise time. A lot of people were texting in and they said that they see time very differently. Like, I see it as circular. Cormac sees it as linear. Some people saw it as a staircase. Some people saw it as a bog roll. Interesting. How do you see time?
How do I see time?
Yeah, how do you see it?
I see it passing very fast before my eyes, if I'm honest.
Yes.
But yeah, I'd say to me it is a little bit more linear. But in terms of maybe the science side of it, it's like you have sort of the space-time continuum. So like time and space kind of being the same thing. Mm-hmm. And things like, you know, kind of gravity, things like that can alter this kind of fabric of the universe. So you can get very, very existential depending on how you want to think about time.
You couldn't just say you thought of a bog roll. No, you couldn't just say I think of it as a toilet roll like one of our listeners. No, you had to go there.
So once I was, to be fair, given a toilet roll of time, which was this very, very long kind of roll of pictures that my friends, when I was finishing my PhD, they gave it to me to document my 5 or 6 years of doing that PhD. And that was the toilet roll of time.
There we go. Okay. Let's get to it. This programme is amazing. Ninth season. But before we get into what's coming up in the series, how did you start on your science journey? Did you always want to be a scientist as a kid? Did somebody buy a little science kit for Christmas? Or how did that all kick off for you?
I think I just always had a really big interest in the natural world. And like, I do remember, you know, these scenes of when I was going to primary school as a child. So my dad was a primary school teacher and I went to his school. And I remember, I presume as a way of sort of keeping me occupied, he used to, and he had the patience of a saint, but he used to essentially kind of ask me quiz questions in the morning on the way to school, you know, what's the capital of this? How does this work in science and things like that? And I think for me anyway, that sort of instilled in me a real kind of like love of the natural world. Even when we used to go on family holidays and things like that, for some reason, we always went to farms. For some reason, that's where we holidayed, and I used to love interacting with the animals and the sea and things like that. So it probably started from a very young age. Mm-hmm. And then as I was finishing school, I realized, in particular, the environment and climate change, like that is, there's huge interest there. And I wanted to be part of trying to make a positive change there. So that's kind of why I went down the line of science.
Good on you. Now, on a TED talk you did, you mentioned how it's a tricky balance to talk about science properly whilst keeping the attention of non-scientific audiences. Is that the case? Like, is it tricky with this show, for example, to keep people interested without going off on one and making it too confusing? Or,
oh, totally. I mean, like, you know, like, a lot of the language that we use about science kind of has double meanings a little bit. So, like, I'll give you an example of that. So if we say the word like significant, it means that something is important, or something, you know, that means something to someone in everyday language. Whereas in science, if you say the word significant, it means that what you're looking at is probably not happening by chance, if you know what I mean. So the result that you've seen is probably not coming by chance, and we describe that as significant. So there's one sort of immediately sort of opposite meaning there in the science world and in the real world. Sorry, not the real world, the everyday world, because science is very, very real.
Okay, it is real.
If that's the one thing to take off, it is real. But there's other words like that. But also, I think there's a sense that like in science, we are kind of like striving to find the answer. And sometimes then it can mean that we can come across as quite like objective.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, in terms of like how we interact with people, we're really like subjective as how we go with how we go about our lives. And we're very much emotional beings as well.
And are you?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Well, you learn something new every day.
And you have to be able to lean into that in how you tell your stories.
Yes, this is true.
Because, you know, feelings will almost never be conquered with the fact. Mm-hmm. So if you can tell a story about science that will emotionally resonate with someone, they're much more likely to take that information away with them.
Was doing a TED Talk, was that a highlight of your career?
Yeah, it was lovely. Like, it was brilliant to be asked to do it. And I remember, you know, like all the prep that you put into it. But it was really kind of, it was door opening for me as well. Like, that TED Talk was the year that I got involved with this show as well. And it was almost like people kept, you know, like they couldn't get enough kind of science in their lives. And it was really, it was a really, really good experience to do it.
So let's talk about this series. 10 Things to Know About starts on RT1 tonight. Can you give me a few examples of the areas you'll be touching on?
Yeah, so there'll be some absolutely fantastic stories and sequences covered in the show. So one example of those, if I was to ask you about coral, would you think of the Great Barrier Reef?
I would, instantly. Exactly,
and scuba diving in these like beautiful tropical waters. But Ireland also has coral, right? But it's off the west coast. It's a few hundred kilometres out, and it's also a few hundred metres deep as well. So this is coral that grows in cold water in the complete and utter darkness. And as a result of that, like, it's quite mysterious because it hasn't really, you know, there's only been a limited amount of studies happening on it. But we don't know how that coral is going to respond to things like climate change and things like changing ocean currents. But we do know is that the more that we can measure it, the better that we can understand how it may change over time. So that's, you know, an example of a truly fascinating story that is happening in Ireland, but that people may not necessarily know about.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about humongous fungus.
Yes, so that is as scary as it sounds. So this is something that's like straight out of a horror movie, and this is one of the stories that I cover. So there's this enormous fungus that grows in the forests of Oregon. So it's about 2,000 acres in size, right? So that's about the same area as Athlone, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is honestly like straight out of a horror movie. So it is a parasite that feeds on trees, essentially, right? So it grows in the soil, and it has these kind of filaments that can attach into the roots of trees. And as it grows, it sucks all of the nutrients out of the trees. So it extends these kind of black arms and white arms, and they grow up essentially on the inside of the tree. And it's almost like it's eating the trees from the inside out. And this is a...
How do we stop it?
You can't really stop it because it's a very, very slow death. So these trees, it takes anything from 20 to 50 years for a tree to be killed. And I think people are really interested in this one in particular because, you know, that series, The Last of Us on HBO, you know, that's all about, like, it's a post-apocalyptic world where a fungus has come in and I believe turned people into zombies.
Yeah.
Now, this particular humongous fungus isn't going to turn us into zombies, but it is not good news for trees in Oregon, absolutely.
That is frightening. You're right. That is frightening. Okay, you've been tasked with Fergus's Curious Chronicles on the show. For those who are new to the programme, what is that all about?
So this is where science meets history, essentially. And I think Irish people love science, but we also love our history. Like, we really like a good yarn. So these are essentially short pieces that look at something that has happened in the past and what was the science of it. So there's a really fascinating example of that from this year's story. So do you remember earlier this year you had that Titan submarine implosion where there was a submarine went down to and it really sadly imploded on the way down. But off the coast of Cork in 1974 is the deepest submarine rescue that ever happened. So there was two workers, they're working in a small submarine and they were laying telephone cables. And on the way back up to the ship at the top, when the ship threw out a rope as the submarine reached the surface, that rope got tangled on the wrong part of the submarine and ripped a little part of it off. So then a part of the submarine was instantly flooded, okay? And such was the amount of water that came in that the submarine then was really heavy and it sank all the way down to the bottom of the ocean again, about 300 metres down. And the two guys in there, right, they then had, you know, they had this awful sort of scene where all they could do was wait to be rescued. On top of that, they only had a limited amount of oxygen in that submarine. So to preserve the oxygen, really cleverly, they climbed to the inside of the top of the submarine and lay down there because every time they breathed out, they were breathing out carbon dioxide. That's heavier than oxygen. So that was sinking to the bottom. So then they went to the top. And they lay there in silence, not talking to each other, as the first full day passed and still no successful rescue. into the second day, still no successful rescue. Now, they were in radio contact. Into the third day, until finally a couple of submarines were sent down, proper ropes attached, and then the slow rise upwards. They finally reached the surface of the sea after 84 hours in complete darkness with 12 minutes of oxygen left.
That is an incredible story.
And it's the deepest successful submarine rescue that ever took place and happened off the coast of Cork.
And nobody knows about it.
Exactly.
Nobody knows about it. What I want to know about is the secrets to aging well. Because there is, I read in the notes, there's one segment on the secrets to aging well. Now, without giving the full game away, is that Lottie Ryan banging on the door already? She's just heard what I said. Can you give me some tips you discovered?
Yeah, so unfortunately we still can't stop time. But what we can do is we can eat a diet in such a way that we can preserve our muscle mass.
Okay.
So there's a really nice piece in the Aging Well episode that is all about. So the bad news is, I think once you reach the age of about 30, you naturally start to lose muscle mass, unfortunately. But there are ways that you can preserve that muscle mass. You know, things like doing like strength-based exercise and things like that in the gym, but also simple things like if you eat a diet that's high in potassium, that's really good for synthesizing proteins, which you need to grow muscles. Sources of potassium that you can have in the diet are things like bananas, rhubarb, spinach and potatoes. So I think I eat all of them. Yeah,
eat all of your
potatoes and lift.
Graham, go off to Bite There and get me a load of banana, spinach, rhubarb and potatoes.
I think you could make a nice kind of a stew with
that. I don't care. I'll just smoothie it up.
Exactly. But then a really nice part of that story is actually, you know that old Irish kind of myth of Tiernanog?
Yeah.
So Oisín and Niamh, they go off to Tiernanog, the land of eternal youth. They live out blissful lives until Oisín returns to the real world and meets his mortal end, etc. But that Irish myth has made its way into modern science, and I couldn't believe this. So there was a group of Japanese scientists about a decade ago who discovered this gene that plays a really important role in keeping stem cells perpetually young. And they named that gene Nanog after Ireland's Tiernanog, which I just found absolutely fascinating. That we have this story we've been telling in Ireland for thousands and thousands of years, and now people are researching a gene called Nanog.
Yeah. That's incredible. That is incredible. Listen, the show is amazing. It is so interesting. It's in its ninth series. What would you put its success down to? Apart from yourself.
Well, I wish I could claim credit for it all. But I think Irish people, like, we love science and we love telling a good story. You know, if you look at people like in coffee shops around the country, in bars around the country, we're always telling us stories. And all of the presenters, so myself, Jonathan and Katrina and the whole team at New Decade, we're really passionate about talking about Irish science and we have really interesting stories to tell. And in particular, the show does a really good job of talking to a researcher, but then also going and talking to someone like a farmer or someone like a patient to see how that research is actually affecting them. So I think the show does a really, really good job of showing the everyday applications of science.
Amazing. Okay, first episode is out tonight. What can we expect to see? Is that the humongous fungus?
I wish it was the humongous fungus, but it is actually the fascinating world of trees, right?
Okay.
So, and we in Ireland, we have a fairly low percentage cover of trees in Ireland. So we're at about 11% currently, but that needs to rise to about 18% tree coverage by 2050. So what that looks like is, if you picture Croke Park, right, the size of Croke Park, and you imagine the pitch is covered in trees. In order to reach our carbon targets, we need to be planting 16,000 Croke Parks worth of trees every year in order to increase our forestry.
Are we on that?
We have a long way to go. We really, really do have a long way to go. And there's another really interesting part in it as well in tonight's show, which is looking at everything to do with how Ireland's trees are represented in literature. So, you know, that book Under the Hawthorn Tree.
Mm-hmm.
So especially like an Irish kind of folklore, I guess, people were very kind of wary of cutting down a hawthorn tree because of what that meant for things like fairies and things like the underworld, the afterlife and things like that. So we'll be looking at that aspect of where science meets culture in the show as well tonight.
I have an 8-year-old. Is it for her or is it going to go way over her head? What do you think?
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's for everyone, essentially. Yeah.
Okay.
It really is.
It's fascinating stuff. And well done on its 9 series, you and all the team. Dr. Fergus McAuliffe, thank you so much for coming in to chat. And you can catch the show later on. It is 10 Things to Know About. It begins tonight on RT1 at 8:30.
Jem Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.